Welcome to this Financial Advisor podcast, our weekly podcast where I speak to leading financial advisors. My guest today is Andre Besson of Braintoast Wealth Management. Welcome, Andre.
Thanks, Eleanor.
Andre, give us a bit of background into Braintoast. What does it specialize in, and would you say there's a specific client profile?
So we do specialize in investments, specifically with a global opportunity set, but we also do risk estate planning roles or fiduciary for clients, but the focus on jobs, the major focus on is on investment.
What is Braintoast's investment philosophy per se?
The big thing would obviously be to diversify, but we don't have a cookie cutter approach that like a one size fits all. So we would meet a client, assess their needs, and then according to their needs or their willingness and ability to take risk, we would take a certain approach on asset allocation, so growth assets versus more conservative assets, and then within that we would diversify across investment styles, across geographies, and even for some clients look at a different currency to invest in.
That leads into my next question. Just how involved are clients in their financial plans? Do they call you every second day, or are most just interested in their annual review meeting?
So it really depends on the client. So some clients want to have a hands-on approach, and they do call us more regularly, or I have more interaction with them. Sometimes, other end of the spectrum, they just want me to tell them like what to do, and they have nothing to do with the finances. I really like clients that do take ownership of their finances, so they would want a certain amount of leadership from us or from me as an advisor, and a trust to follow that. But also, I want them to ask questions, and I want them to feel involved. So it's not a situation that a client would call us daily, and like if the market has some jitters, they get nervous and call. But it's also not a situation where we only send an email or a review once a year.
Because especially given the current low growth economy we're experiencing and the uncertainty in the political and economic future, I'm sure clients have a ton of questions. What type of questions are they asking you, and are they nervous at the moment?
Yes, the more informed client would ask me about global concerns, so global slowdown in growth, or as we have seen a big span of global synchronized growth, everybody is very concerned about the trade wars between Trump and Xi Jinping. So if America and China get in a spat, then the whole world will feel the brunt of that. But the more local investor or has more focus on local news, they would be very concerned about obviously, ESCOM, the debt, the sovereign debt that South Africa has, corruption, and also they're very concerned about the flat growth of the growth curve of the JSE the past 5 years. So in that context, we really want clients to know how we position portfolios, what speaks towards protection against trade wars or global growth, and also protection against South Africa, especially debt or possible downgrade.
Some local analysts are seeing opportunities on the JSE, given the fact that there are companies with low PEs at the moment. What opportunities do you currently see in the local market, if any?
For local market, we see opportunities in SA cash and bonds. It gives us, you can get a good SA government bond or retail bond for 19%. You can get, obviously, those go into, if you talk unit trust, go into enhanced income funds, SA cash and bonds, and now we really get a high interest rate if you compare it to inflation. So if inflation is in excess of 4%, or between 4 and 5, and we get a really high interest rate than that, you can get a very high real return at almost no risk. So if you use some SA enhanced income funds, you can get a high return for very low volatility or low risk. And I would really struggle, really a hard decision for a client to take a bet on the JSE if they get that high income return in an income fund. But given the long term, we really don't see it like an SA cash and bond as a parking place for 20 years. But for now, the next 1 year or the next until we see some structural reform in South Africa, it's a good place to be.
Conversely, are there any sectors that you would be avoiding at this point?
We are very wary about, first of all, the manner in which you invest. I'm a bit concerned about, because I get a lot of clients that want to take a big bet, let's say on SA listed property, because they have taken a big dive. Until we see good fundamentals in that sector, we won't allocate towards it. But what I'm speaking towards is that I do find a lot of clients either get very scared and they just want to jump ship completely, or they want to take a big bet because they lost a lot of money recently, so or didn't get a lot of growth recently. So my advice really is to stick towards a long-term plan, but we are skeptic about any asset class that is overly exposed to an SA Inc. type of story. So we would diversify and have a bit more focus on the global growth story.
Great. Sort of related, one of your specialities is risk cover. Given the tough economic climate we find ourselves in, do you find that clients are cancelling or avoiding risk products, for example, disability and income protection, or is the opposite true?
I don't really see clients cancelling. I do see old clients or new clients that have been in the market for a long time with regards to risk policies. They question whether they need it, and it's a bit scary that a lot of clients don't understand what they actually have. So clients that have been in the right kind of product, they don't cancel. They would just be critical about what is the amount that they need. Are they overinsured? Are they in the right kind of structure? But we don't really see the clients canceling. In the same breath, in the same sentence, I would tell clients, listen, my plan always is to just put the basic in place for risk cover and invest the majority of your budget for financial planning in towards an investment portfolio and spend the least amount on risk cover. And the clients that is not in that space, they either cancel or they just reduce the cover.
That's interesting. You've just become a dad. Congratulations. One definitely looks at the world differently after becoming a parent, especially where your finances are concerned. What do you think the most essential risk and investment products new parents should be considering taking out?
So it is really a privilege to become a dad, and I do agree with you that you see the world very differently. So I really think finances is just, it should be a means to an end. So you need to ascertain what is the end, what is the goal that you want to achieve. And if you want to take care of your loved ones, then obviously a starting point is risk cover, investments, wealth, etc. But for younger clients, that you specifically in a space that you're still building wealth in your career, you don't have a lot of wealth at the moment. So obviously you need to look at life cover if you want to leave money to kids and not leave them financially vulnerable if you die at a young stage. So you look at life cover, but also you look at a proper income protection and lump sum disability. So you look at the amount of debt you have to cover that should you become disabled, not able to work. But the point, there's many ways to structure it, but the point I want to make is that you need to look after yourself financially. Because if you are strong enough, you can take care of other people. But if you don't take care of you, you can't take care of others as well. So I did say in the previous question you want to spend the least amount on risk cover, but for young people that's still earning and growing in their career, you really need to look at a proper income protection and also life cover. And especially in the area that we work in, the professional people or careers, they do pay a lot less for their cover.
Very interesting. You mentioned wills. Regarding estate planning, what do you think are the most important factors to consider as a parent wanting to leave a legacy for your children?
So it's really shocking to see the stats of how little people have a proper will in place. And if you don't have a will, then you would just have a lot of red tape to go through the people that you leave behind. So it's really utmost important to have a will and to structure it in the correct way. You need to look at guardians. Who is the proper guardian for your children if you would die together with your spouse? If you would die on your own, you'd look at how much life cover you would want to leave towards your wife so she can be in a position to take care of your kids. And also, if in the first example, if you and your wife, for instance, would be in a, or your spouse would be in a car accident and you leave your kids behind, who's going to be the custodians of those capital that you leave and in what structure? So we would recommend a testamentary trust, and that can unwind again at the age of the kids. They can be, for instance, 18, 21, or 23. But I really recommend that you speak to a fiduciary specialist in this regard to really set up it's not actually that difficult. It's just really neglected. And to be quite honest, in my opinion, there's not a lot of money to be made with wills, so there's not a lot of importance put on it when you speak to clients. So it's one of the basics that you need to put in place, and it's a no-go to not have one.
I think, thank God, we have Wills Week coming up in September, where at least the industry is trying to educate people about this. Okay, in today's age, where most information is a click away, why is having a financial advisor necessary? I think you've hinted at it quite a lot in this interview.
Yeah, I'm not saying you must have a financial advisor. I do see some clients or people that they want to do their own stuff, and that's okay. I'm not forcing like anybody. But I, like when we had to have the baby, it was so great to speak to a specialist and a person that can guide you through the emotions, that can give you specialist advice, which you can also look up on Google, but there's a person that you can speak to. So I always advise clients, there's two things you need to be aware of when you look at your financing, that's fear and greed, and that's actually just your emotions. So you need somebody to just take you by the hand and go through the emotions. And what actually happens in practice is that when I speak to a couple, one of the two would be financially savvy. The other one, they don't worry about the finances as long as there is enough at the end of the month. But what if that person is the one left behind? You really need somebody to take them by the hand, somebody they can trust, and that can guide them through the events in life. And the other thing that I do find is that if you do everything on your own, there's nobody to hold you accountable. So if the market falls to 40%, let's say, after the great financial crisis, and you don't understand what's happening, you don't understand QE, and now you don't understand QT, and you don't understand all the jargon out there. If you don't have somebody to hold you accountable, to stick to your plan, then you might be easier to take the wrong decision.
So one thing I find is it's quite difficult to find a financial advisor. You know, everyone says, oh, use mine, or, you know, you've got someone that you know who might be an advisor. What should you look for in an advisor?
Well, I would not look at is somebody who's just like a sneaky salesman. You need to look at, listen to your gut feel. I think there's not just one guy that can help you out there or lady. There might be a couple of people that you can associate with or that you can connect with. You need to have a gut feel. You need to have trust in this person. You need to see that they have knowledge and skill. And I think it's important that somebody would be part of a team, because if you're also entrusting an individual, but something can happen to that individual, and is there a continuity, because you want to build a relationship for the long term, 10, 20, 30 years. So I would look at somebody that you can trust, somebody that's part of a reputable organization, and I think it's also important to have an independent kind of setup where people are not driven by sales, but driven by a passion for the job and a passion to help people. And I think there is people out there that can help you in that regard.
Lastly, what would you say is the best and the worst financial advice you ever received?
So the worst financial advice would be anything that pushes you. You need to make a decision now. And there's great opportunity, but you need to make a decision now. So anything that makes you cause a hasty decision, I think that's bad advice. Anything that focuses only on selling, I think that is not good advice. I think if you pick up that whatever somebody is telling you is for their benefit and not yours, I think that's bad advice. I think good advice would be to your benefit, whether it's the financial advisor would benefit along the way. Yes, that should be the case, but it shouldn't be the main objective. I think good advice would also be an advisor that eats their own cooking. So you can ask them, show me your financial, your investment portfolio. Don't need to look at the value, you just need to look at the fund. So I would need to invest your money the same way I do with mine, and that you get a high level of integrity. And also good advice would be outcome-based. I always tell clients, money is a good servant, but a bad master. So money should serve you. So if I ask you, when do you have enough money? People, they don't get a number. If they do get you the number, that's not enough. But if I tell you, listen, I can help empower you to take care of your loved ones, or I can help you get enough capital for retirement, and you work out a number. So if you have a great outcome and you build towards that, then I think that's also good advice. And then it's not something just airy-fairy something gray, then it really becomes black and white and touchable for you.
That was Andre Besson of Braintoast Wealth Management.